organisations with a special focus on education. I can genuinely say it was exhausting. And are we now live on Facebook?
Yes, you didn't want to interrupt, but yes.
So look, sorry for the Facebook viewers. We had a little technical glitch starting out. I was just talking a little bit about a trip I'd done before this last parliamentary week to India, which was fascinating. Look, what a revelation. India is a country that is transforming. It is pivotal to the future of Australia and Western Australia. They are a vibrant democracy, but also they have all of their public institutions are effectively identical to ours, being a Commonwealth, a Commonwealth country and obviously an ex-British colony. And that is a wonderful basis for us to do business. Look, I won't go on, but a really interesting country in transformation. I'll do a couple of little takeaways in it. One is their preservation of green space in their mega cities is something to behold. Perth looks like a desert compared to even the largest Indian cities. I went to Mumbai, Bengaluru, Chennai, and Kolkata, other locations, and it is fantastic to see. And the denudation of tree canopy, particularly, can I say, with the government's vicious infill policy, is really they really put us to shame with that. The other thing is, what a country on the move. They are really doing this magnificent effort of lifting their population out of poverty, and it really is a country that's transitioned dramatically. But won't go on. Could go on forever about that. It's a very long, important part of our future. But what I want to talk about first up, Premier McGowan, or ex-Premier McGowan, sudden resignation. And it was very sudden, I can say, whilst not to talk out of school, I can say that the Labor Party members who were on the trip with me were as surprised as I was about the resignation and really taken aback by that. But look, that being said, I've said it before publicly, and sometimes people on our side don't, think you should always criticise the other side. But I did have some significant differences with Premier McGowan on certain policy issues and other matters. But what I do respect is the length of community service that he's taken. 27 years in Parliament, and I know for people who are outside of the sort of direct member of Parliament world, they may not think much of that. But I can tell you, it's a grueling commitment, and because it's not just a commitment for you, it's your whole family, because suddenly your whole family is in the public view as well as yourself. So that's a huge commitment. And I thank the Honourable Mark McGowan for that commitment to public service. And I wish him the best for the future. Getting on to, the extension of that matter, we've got the new Dream Team, apparently, for the Labor Party. The Honourable Roger Cook as the Premier, the Honourable Rita Saffiotti as the Deputy Premier, and now the Treasurer, which I think is fascinating, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But, Roger Cook, I mean, he was practically sacked by Premier McGowan in the day for his failure in health, and I won't go through it all because we've done that to death, but, he absolutely failed a health system that should be gold standard. That's what he was handed, and he has turned it into chaos. And just one little thing, that poor nurse working 29 hours. It's just untenable that we could have this situation in our state, given our economy. But, just utterly failed and handed a suicide to pass to the new health minister, the Honourable Amber Jade Sanderson. So, it's a really... A minister who failed, and he was given tourism as a bit of a reward, as a bit of a sop, and he took good advantage of that, travelled all over the world, had a good time, and then lo and behold, suddenly he's Premier. So not a good start, I think, to get someone who was sacked for failing before suddenly becoming the Premier. And of course, Deputy Premier and Treasurer, the Honourable Rita Saffiotti. And he is the minister that's taken a $3 billion project. I mean, that's an eye-watering sum by itself. Turned it into over a $10 billion project. I mean, she's gobbled up the lion's share of capital in the government's capital budget, and it's expanding. It's going to go up to $12 billion or something like that you know, some enormous sum of money that could actually have been used to help homelessness and some of those other critical issues and health. And now she's treasurer. Just imagine that, you know. You've put the sort of crooks in charge of the bank. You've got a minister who has no idea of how to control cost in her own portfolio, now as treasurer. I mean, this is, setting us up for a debacle in the state. Look, we're blessed in the state with massive income, and it's unparalleled. This is literally once in a lifetime. In fact, it's probably once in several lifetimes opportunity in terms of income. We don't see any meaningful reduction in debt. And, of course, in the forward estimates, state debt is actually going up. And now you put someone in charge of Treasury who's utterly failed in their own portfolio to control cost. That's not a good look. But, let's hope for the best. As I've said on this, forum before, I hope the government does a good job. I genuinely do. I'm just disappointed that they continue to fail to deliver for the people of Western Australia. The Rockingham by-election is coming up. Perhaps it surprised some, the Liberal Party is running a candidate, and we'll go through a process to select a candidate for that by-election. Why are we doing it? We're doing it because we believe that you should have choice. The people of Rockingham should have a choice between, the Labor Party, who are just failing in every aspect of the state, whether it's law and order, whether it's education, whether it's health, whether it's actually management of the state's finances. They're failing in all of those aspects. And we think the people of Rockingham should have the chance to say, you know what? We want the government to be better. We want to choose a candidate that reflects better good government and the values that we support. So we're going to have an excellent candidate in that seat, I am certain, and we're going to give it a red-hot go. Look, we're not pie-eyed on this one. It's, clearly a strong Labor electorate. But this is, Premier McGowan was well-recognised by the electorate, and the electorate overwhelmingly endorsed his handling, particularly during the COVID period. That period's gone now. Now is the chance to hold the government to account for their appalling performance everywhere else. So good luck to our candidate, will be selected in the very near future. And I hope the people of Rockingham use this as an opportunity to send a message to the now Cook Labor government that they need to lift their game. They need to do a better job for the people of Western Australia. Look, I will end there. Lots of topics potentially to talk about. One, the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill, and I will touch on that very briefly. Getting a lot of coverage now. This was debated back in Parliament in November 2021. Vince Catania, who was a National Party member and shadow for Aboriginal Affairs, and myself, carried the great majority of that debate. I'll send it out soon in terms of the links to that original debate, but all of the issues that are being raised now, we raised in the debate, and we raised that with the government, in particular the fact that people are going to be potentially criminalised by this act because they simply don't know what's in it. And this is an enormously onerous act. It is a fundamental change. And for Minister Tony Booty to come out and say, oh, nothing's changed, nothing's different, that is absolute rubbish. This is a profound change. This bill, not only are there severe penalties if someone, deliberately or knowingly damages Aboriginal cultural heritage, and who would disagree with that? This bill criminalises you if you do it completely mistakenly. So unlike a serious criminal offence, such as, if you kill someone or you do some terrible thing, but if you did it by accident, when you go to court, you can use accident as a defence. This bill specifically precludes you from using accident as a defence. So you can do something entirely in good faith, entirely unaware that you are going to cause harm, despite your best endeavours, and the fines are severe, jail and $1 million penalties. That's if you do it by mistake, let alone otherwise, if you don't follow the process as it's been laid out. So, this is a terrible bill in the sense that it precludes that. And everyone accepts that we should protect our original cultural heritage, but the way this bill does it causes all sorts of problems. But I'll get to the particular point. Not letting people know in time, not making people aware. As of 1 July, this bill comes into force. The regulations, which are extensive and have all sorts of provisions in them, have only just been published. And people don't know what it affects. This will affect every earthmoving contractor who does any work on roads or areas or clearing. It doesn't just affect landowners. It affects anyone who works on the land. So it's incumbent on the government to come out with a proper communication package on this bill and to make sure that innocent, good Western Australians don't end up being prosecuted in court and potentially going to jail because they are simply unaware of it because the government hasn't communicated it. So that's why the opposition has been asking for the government to delay implementation for 6 months. And I'll you know, I've said it out, I'll put up posting on Facebook. Back in November 2021, almost 2 years ago, I outlined this in detail to Minister Booty during what's called consideration in detail, where we go through the bill in detail, that we have to have a communication package so that we don't end up with people being inadvertently implicated in a criminal offence. And the minister said, yes, yes, they'll do it. And what do we see? At the 11th hour, they've got a completely bungled rollout of a communication package. And people are legitimately extremely concerned. My colleague Neil Thompson has put a petition out to get people to, or to get the government, ask the government to delay implementation of this bill by 6 months. He's got over 21,000 signatures. I believe it's the largest petition in the history of the state, exceeds the petition for the demersal fishing ban. So, you know, clearly there's a lot of concern. The government should heed the call and delay the implementation of this bill. Look, otherwise, thanks very much for listening to WA This Week. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcasting app. You can also watch the live video version on Facebook, Spotify, YouTube, TikTok by searching Dr. David Honey. So please do that. Please share it. Please get the message out. And look forward to another edition next week.
All right. We do have some questions. And I want to note that we have a special viewer today in the audience, the leader of the Liberal Party, Libby Medham. They can watch it right now. So,
well, welcome, Libby. And always a great pleasure to communicate.
All right. So we have this question from James on Facebook. He says, do you think the government needs to be more accountable?
Look, absolutely. You know, one of the things we've consistently said as an opposition is that this is the least accountable government in the history of the state. And we see this constantly when we do FOI applications. I mean, literally, I've got back page after page, which are essentially blanked out pages. And the government plays this game where they constantly refuse to provide information under the FOI. But they don't just say we're not doing it. They go, oh, can you narrow the scope? Oh, can you redefine this? Oh, there are too many documents and whatever. And you go through a process up to 12 months to actually try and get something back. When you do get it back, you get no information whatsoever. We've seen this government constantly refuse calls by the opposition for them to explain actions, to explain processes. And, you know, I'll give you an example. The state government have received legal advice on the implications of the voice referendum. If it succeeded, how would that impact on the state? We've said to the state government, can you please release that legal advice? Pretty reasonable call to say, look, let's inform the general public about this because they're going to be voting on that referendum sometime soon. They've refused to do that, even release that advice. I mean, this is perverse. So it's a really... a government that is not transparent. Look, here's the opportunity. You've had a reset. New Premier, new Deputy Premier. Let's see if they really will live the value of gold standard transparency that they promised, at least the former Premier McGowan promised when he came into office.
All right, we have a question on TikTok. Well, someone put several questions in, but I'll just give one from Quarterback saying, failing, you literally were obliterated at the last election.
Look, you know, this is an objective fact, isn't it? I don't know about obliterated, but boy, we certainly took more than a little bit of flack in that election. And we know about that election. That election was a referendum on handling of COVID. And that, and I look, I, you know, obviously I was working really hard in my electorate you know, across the state as well in terms of that campaign. And that was clear to me everywhere. It was clear to me on my own polling booth. But no one came to me and talked to me about any other issue other than saying, we think Mark McGowan did a good job with COVID and we're going to reward him. I had people that had voted Liberal literally their entire life, you know, people in their 80s who'd always voted Liberal, and they said, look, I really, you know, like the Liberal Party, but I feel I have to reward the Labor Party. So, yeah. But you know what? We may be a diminished team, but I can tell you we are, I think, and you may say, self-praise is no praise at all, but, you know, Libby Medham as leader and our National Party colleagues and my Upper House colleagues are working their heart out to reveal the failings of this government, and I think they're doing a fantastic job.
All right. So James Paradiso and Jane Lindsay have the same question, which is, what do you think is going to happen in the 2025 election?
Look, it's a complete change scene. Oh, you know, the simple reality is that the popularity of Premier, former Premier Mark McGowan had an enormous impact on the federal election, and I won't go through the sort of data on that, but it was very, very clear that that still had a huge impact on the federal election, which affected us. But it also was continuing, you know, Premier McGowan, as he was, we still had a popularity of around 72%. You know, most leaders around the world would be ecstatic to get that because he'd come down from 93. So, you know, some people said there was a fall, but it was still very high. And I thought that would still have a huge effect on the next election. I think that that change in leadership brings a whole range of other seats into play. Look, what's going to happen? It's a fool that takes any election for granted. I mean, if we were to consider, you know, on our side, the Liberals, if we thought, oh, well, with Mark McGowan going, suddenly we're going to pick up a whole swag of seats, then we'd fail. But what we're determined to do, we're going to have outstanding candidates. We're going to have outstanding policies. And we're going to run a tough campaign against the Labor Party. We're doing it to win government at the next election. And I have no doubt whatsoever we'll do significantly better than we did last time. But I think former Premier McGowan leaving is also going to bring more seats into play on our side.
All right. Well, you have a compliment on TikTok that says that you are better dressed than the president.
Well, we'll see. Andrew, please.
Yeah. So Renzi says McGowan ruined WA on TikTok.
Well, you know, you look at it, and as I said, you know, former Premier Mark McGowan certainly got high praise for handling of COVID. And, you know, that was a consistent view across the community that people recognised that. But look at every other aspect. I mean, violent crime increased by 20%. You know, hospital ramping, ambulance ramping, but not just ambulance ramping, the delays in surgery for people off scale in comparison to any former government. Look at the debacle in Bankshear Hill, and can I say the cruelty in Bankshear Hill, just ridiculous. Look at the schools. We don't even have fully trained teachers in all of our classrooms now under Labor, going back to the Gallup era where we had the same problem. You know, so, you know, you look at health, law and order, education, the big areas, they're failing in every aspect. So you're right. You know, under the cover of COVID, this government's failed in every direction. And, you know, they've got enormous, you know, sums of money coming in because of the GST fixed by the Liberal National Federal Government, as it was, and because of the iron ore royalties and other mineral royalties. I mean, it is literally once in a couple of generation boom in government income. So they sort of love to throw around these buckets of money, but then they just fail to deliver at every aspect. You know, public housing, I think perhaps they're back to what they were when they came into office, when they sold off a whole heap of public houses. So, yep, they failed at every level, and that's going to become apparent. As I said, with Premier McGowan gone, they can't hide behind the COVID response anymore, and they're going to be held accountable for their failures in multiple portfolios.
All right, we have another couple of questions on Facebook. One from Peter Lawson. I'll clean up his language a little bit. And he asks, I guess, if you win government, are you going to repeal the Aboriginal Land Act?
Well, I suspect he means the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Bill. Look, Look, Premier Booty's, or Premier Booty, perhaps he's got aspirations. That might be a Freudian slip, but Minister Booty, who's the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs and the Minister responsible for bringing in that act, is correct when he says Aboriginal cultural heritage protection has existed all the time. And of course, I won't go through it here because we don't have time, but you know, that is, you know, normally it's been applied to big projects, big land clearing, mines and the like, not land over 1,100 square metres in the southwest of the state where you've got the bulk of the population. So, and we certainly wouldn't repeal the Act as such, but I'm certain that there are areas that we're going to look to modify in that Act. Now, I can't, you know, there's a different shadow for that area in our party, and they'll come forward with some recommendations. But it's very, very clear that there are provisions within this Act that I think are unworkable. In fact, I think the way that the Act has been constructed, it institutionalises conflict between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in communities. And I'm terrified that is going to occur. It won't be everywhere, but I'm really terrified about this because, you know, I think everyone's committed to reconciliation and you know, that Aboriginal people shouldn't be marginalised and, you know, all sides of politics. I think everyone recognises that. But, you know, the way this bill is constructed, I think there are aspects of it that are going to lead to conflict. I think that's really unfortunate. And more importantly, I think people are going to be inadvertently criminalised. So let's hope we avoid that. And we'll be looking forward to see if there are sensible changes we can make to this Act to make it more workable.
John Dacre on TikTok says, Liberals need to stop drifting left. They keep losing when they do that.
Well, look, you know, I think you'll see that when we come out at the next election with our policies. And, you know, judge us then. As I said, there's a huge amount of work going on. We may be a diminished team, but boy, we're focused, and we're really keen to make sure that we reflect the values of the people of Western Australia, and in particular, the people that support the Liberal Party. So I think you'll see that. So judge us when those policies come out before the next election. And I might say, you know, the government loves to taunt us and say, "What's your policy on this? What's your policy on that?" We'll release our policies when it suits us. We'll do that in plenty of time for you and the general community to understand those policies, but we're not going to sit there sort of informing the government about it 2 years out unless it's a very particular area.
Do you have more time for questions?
I do.
Okay, I'll hang it. So we have quite a few coming out of Facebook. Daniel Rillo asks, what's your position on women being erased in women's only sports by trans women?
Look, this is a really vexed area, isn't it? And, you know, I do think if you've got someone who's a genetic male and they're competing in a female sport, I think that is unfair. And I think that that's what we want to focus on. Look, how people choose to identify is their business, and I'm never going to get involved in a debate on that. But the reason you have men's and women's sports is that genetic males and genetic females have different athletic capacities on average. And that's why it's separated. So typically, genetic males are stronger and they can, for example, run faster, and particularly at the elite athlete level. So I think it's very unfair to allow genetic males to compete in female sports, particularly at the elite level. Look, you know, you get sports like netball, they're mixed, and at the sort of general community level, and that works really well. But otherwise, you know, I think we have to be fair and reasonable. And I think we look at this, and a lot of female athletes and a very large number of senior female athletes have come out and said, hang on, so I can train all of my life. I can, you know, I can be at the absolute pinnacle of athletes who are genetically female, but now I'm going to have to compete with someone who's a genetic male, and they see that as desperately unfair. And I think that's correct. So I think in this case, I'm not going to get caught up in the definition of how people define themselves. I respect people's rights in that regard, but when it comes to competitive sport, especially at the elite level, I think we need to have a clear line in the sand.
Okay, Rowan asks, how challenging was it to lead a two-person opposition in the Legislative Assembly?
Well, you could ask Libby the same question. Libby and I are of one mind, and that is we want to see a Liberal government, and we work really cooperatively with our National Party colleagues. We work hard, and I'm pretty sure none of you would have watched it, but if we go back 3 weeks, we had the estimates process, which is where we get to grill the government on every aspect of the budget. There were only six of us there, Libby and myself and my four National Party colleagues, to grill them. And we grilled the government. I mean, we were doing 14-hour days for that week. And we took the government through the budget and made sure that we grilled them on that budget. So we're working hard. And, it's just a pleasure to work with Libby. It's a pleasure to work with my National Party colleagues because we're focused on one thing, and that is removing this hopeless cooked Labor government.
All right, we'll take one last question, which is, I'll just read it out. It's a bit long, but it says, I was disappointed to find out that WA's new electric vehicle network only supports one type of fast DC charging, CCS2. I've struggled to get any information on if both standards are going to be supported or if me and my new car is going to be left out in the cold if taxpayers' money is being spent. It shouldn't support all standards.
Yeah, look, it's a real problem with electric vehicles, isn't it? And that you don't have that sort of just one common type facility. I wasn't aware that that was the case. I'm happy to chase that up. In fact, I can ask a question in Parliament on that. So my colleague here will take a note of that. But it is a real issue. And can I look, yesterday, you have a bit of fun and recreation in Parliament occasionally. And on Thursday, which was yesterday, I had the opportunity to drive a hydrogen vehicle. Toyota are introducing their Mira hydrogen vehicle into Western Australia. I am a big fan of hydrogen. That particular vehicle, beautiful car. You should have a look at it. It's a magnificent vehicle. Now, I know, and I had some comments when I did a post on this that, hey, is this affordable for the ordinary family? I don't think it is at this stage. But nevertheless, it's good to see that start. But there's only one hydrogen refueling station in the state, and that's at the ATCO facility out at Jandakot. So hydrogen, I think, is much, offers a much better solution for a lot of people. This particular car has a 650-kilometer range, and it only takes a few minutes to refill it. And for hydrogen, there's only one type of plug. There's an agreed standard on that. So you just, plug it in like you're essentially like a LPG car. And it refills very rapidly. So that should be the case for electrical. It would just be lovely to see a standard. But look, I'll chase it up. You can't imagine it's too hard to have different types of plugs. And unless there's different technology in terms of the rate of filling or something, rate of charging, maybe that's a problem. Happy to follow it up. And we shouldn't be sort of picking winners. It shouldn't only be Teslas that can be charged. It should be the range of electrical vehicles that are available to the people of Western Australia.
All right. Well, there are more questions, but we're way over time, so I'll leave it there.
Well, look, thanks, everyone. As I said, please share, subscribe, and I've sort of had a bit of a disruption over the last couple of weeks, but we'll be back regularly going forward. Thank you.